This is Show Up Inspired, the podcast exploring what keeps professionals at their best and thriving. I'm Alicia Castles. Aristotle said, "My best friend is the man who, in wishing me well, wishes it for my sake." And more than 2,000 years later, we still live in a culture that asks, "How are you?" And then, without giving much sincere consideration, we turn to speak to the next person before we've even heard the answer. Maybe that's part of the reason why we don't often think about how we ourselves are actually doing. And if we work as service professionals, like teachers, medical staff, and social workers, especially in high-stress environments, assessing and maintaining our own wellness is critical. In today's podcast, I'm going to ask you the question, how are you doing? And no, not in the offhanded social way that we're used to, but instead, we're going to take a look at a few very specific benchmarks you can use to assess your physical and emotional wellness and do so on a regular basis. Do you know what the symptoms of burnout would look like in your professional life? What would you do if you experienced symptoms of burnout? Well, we're going to explore just that. And because wellness is about the whole person and not just discrete aspects of our personal and professional life experience, our plan is to take a comprehensive look at some of the key factors involved in maintaining overall well-being. To help us do that, I'll speak with Dr. Casey Mixon of Valdosta State University and our very own Military Families Learning Network. Casey will help us explore the research and best practices involved in maintaining wellness. And we'll begin by hearing from Gloria, an experienced helping professional.
We assist service members who are active, who either have a spouse, a child, or a dependent parent with a special need. That can entail either a medical need, a mental health need, or educational need. And my job is to support the family in any way I can with information, resources. If it's attending an individualized education plan with them, I'll do that.
Our team visited Gloria and her colleagues on site at the military installation where they work as service professional. We learned about the work they do to support military service members and their families and the challenges and rewards they experience every day on the job. We also learned about some of the things that they do to maintain wellness in order to ensure the delivery of effective services. Back now to Gloria.
For myself, meditation, it allows you to just really clear your thoughts. And for me and my personality, my mind is always going. It's always running. I'm always thinking about the next thing. And I like to plan. I don't like things to just happen. So with meditation, it helps me to just relax and take in life and take it one step at a time. So the meditation was healing for me. It's something that I've known about for a long time, but when I had a life-changing event, it caused it for me to try it.
Researchers have examined the prevalence of burnout, symptoms, and factors contributing to burnout among military, medical, and behavioral health care providers. Across these studies, definitions of burnout vary, but three core dimensions, exhaustion, depersonalization, and a reduced sense of accomplishment, tend to be the most consistently identified in the literature. In these studies, rates of burnout documented among military providers fall between 21 and 34%, depending on the study. And these results highlight the importance of monitoring and addressing symptoms of burnout, even more importantly, preventing burnout whenever possible. Before you get started, one of the things I would really love to have you do for our audience is state your name and talk a little bit about your background.
My name is Casey Mixon. I am a trained marriage and family therapist and also an assistant professor in the psychology, counseling, and marriage and family therapy department at Valdosta State University. and just to give you a little background, I'm the project director for the family development concentration area of MFLN. My specialization area is in family trauma, and specifically, I did a lot of work with family violence, domestic violence, children who have been exposed to violence or who have been in abusive situations, whether it be sexual, physical, or neglect, or emotional. And I worked a lot in that arena and found a calling in trying to help ease, help children and their families find ways to process kind of what's happened to them, or if it's chronic trauma that's going on, what's happening to them, and to ground themselves enough to be able to start the healing process, to find some semblance of ease of suffering from pain and traumatic experiences that they could have, that they experienced in their lifetime.
It's a beautiful professional mission. And, you know, with the work, I'm guessing that you have personal experience with kind of strategies, you know, for wellness, doing the kinds of work that you do. And I guess my first question would be, as you think about both the research and your professional experience, what are some important areas in terms of the ability of helping professionals to serve clients and students effectively as it relates to wellness? So what areas of wellness are important to kind of ensure that we're doing the work effectively?
So I'm really grateful that you're bringing that up. And it's so important, especially in work with trauma, where you're hearing really difficult stories every single day. You're going to be affected by it, whether you're aware of it or not. And so we have an ethical obligation in helping professions such as psychotherapy or in advocacy roles or in case management roles to make sure that we have an awareness of where we are in our wellness, so that we're not imposing things onto those we're trying to help inadvertently. I don't think helping professionals go out really wanting to have a lasting or a negative effect necessarily on their clients. I mean, why would they be in that situation in the first place? But it happens, and it happens because we don't take care of ourselves. We may not know to take care of ourselves, or we don't have some of the awareness tools in our toolbox, in our wellness kind of assessment toolbox, to understand the signs of things like induction, burnout, compassion fatigue, or secondary trauma. And then there's also a piece that where there's a stigma, whether it's perceived by the helping professional or it may be an actual stigma that's kind of imposed upon us by society or in different communities that we're in, that, you know, therapists or helping professionals, they need to be strong and they don't need to seek out therapy or help. You know, one of the things in early on in my, I guess, clinical development as a kind of young budding therapist, I was exposed to one inventory kind of assessment, self-assessment called the 5-factor well. It's since then had multiple iterations. So the aspects of wellness that really appealed to me in the 5-factor well is they broke it down, wellness, to creative self that then has some subcategories, to the physical self, to the coping self, to the essential self and to the social self. So this inventory can become a tool. Another one of the other five aspects, specifically the coping self, there were four different, in this particular iteration, there were four different kind of subcategories. One was leisure, one was having realistic beliefs, one was, you know, stress management, and one was self-worth. So you can see how this is one way or one tool that can be useful in really taking a hard look to make sure that if there is an area that you're struggling with, this kind of can break it down and help guide you to then implement some strategies that are going to help get you to where you want to be on a wellness level.
I love the idea of looking at an inventory or using an inventory to mm-hmm. kind of help in terms of a milepost, you know. Are there any other signs or mileposts that might be important for helping individuals assess kind of whether we might be experiencing symptoms of compassion fatigue or burnout?
Hearing about clients' traumatic experiences, it just has adverse effects on you. And it doesn't mean that you're, you know, you don't have strength as a clinician. It doesn't mean that you're a bad clinician or a bad, you know, person in the helping capacity. It means you're human and that you have empathy. And so that's a really good thing and a great characteristic obviously to have as a helping professional, but it also can potentially put you in a vulnerable state if you don't have that sense of awareness of when it's really affecting you to the point where there's warning signs and to the point where you really need to implement some preventative strategies that will combat the negative effects of hearing stories of loss and suffering and pain and hopelessness and, you know, prolonged crisis and violence or traumatic death or even just difficulty transitioning and just seeing clients or people that you work with who you've developed bonds with, professional bonds with, just in a tough situation. To answer your question regarding knowing the signs of burnout. So if we're defining burnout, burnout really is an inability to perform in a helping capacity. So for instance, for a family therapist, your clinical work appropriately because of emotional exhaustion or depersonalization or really kind of a lack of accomplishment. If we're defining burnout in that way, then there's different red flags to know if you or your colleague, maybe you have a colleague who's kind of helps you with accountability or just to talk about cases. Different areas of burnout to look for are exhaustion, incompetence, negative work environment, devaluing clients, and deterioration of personal life. So for instance, for exhaustion, if you're noticing that you're saying all the time, or maybe one of your colleagues saying all the time, I feel exhausted because of all my job role as, you know, a therapist, or that is obviously a sign of exhaustion. It can be a red flag. Something related to incompetence that can be a red flag is maybe I don't feel like I'm making any changes in my client's life. So it's not really saying that you're an incompetent person, but your feeling or your perception is, you know, I'm not making, you know, I'm here to facilitate change. And that's not happening. And so those feelings of incompetence tend to ensue. For a negative work environment, maybe you're frustrated with your system and your workplace, you're frustrated with the lack of, maybe you have a lack of support, or maybe there's not a good, maybe there's not a good time or kind of way to be able to feel, you know, valued even in that work environment. They're devaluing a client, you know, if you're hearing yourself or someone else say, you know, I'm not really interested in my clients and their problems, or they're minimizing their clients' problems, or they should just, like, kind of these ideas that they should just get over it. These are all really clear signs of burnout. And really, when I hear those, or I find myself kind of going in that direction, whether it be in my thoughts or saying things out loud and just venting about my day, that's a clear sign that I need to kind of do some good wellness work in assessment of where I'm at, to make sure that that burnout isn't going to negatively impact who I'm working with. And that could be, that can really stretch through past the helping professions. That can just be in multiple identities, like an identity as a parent, an identity as, you know, an instructor or a professor, you know, in that capacity too. The other really clear sign of burnout is connected to that deterioration in your personal life, your interpersonal relationships. There's a breakdown, there's a disconnect. So how are your relationships with your family members? Are they being negatively impacted by your work in this this burnout? In any of these aspects, it's just an indication that you need to seek out support. It's not necessarily an indication that you're a bad person. Again, it's very easy to get into, it's very, you know, given the amount of stories of loss and stories of, you know, pain and struggle, it's a human condition to not get replenished and to go into these places.
You know, we are going to be talking a lot about burnout, but I also know on the flip side of the coin is wellness. And do you want to talk a little bit about the importance of wellness and maybe even different dimensions of wellness and wellness activities in kind of helping maybe prevent burnout?
Right. So I define, and this is just based on some work that I did with researchers in 2012, I think we defined wellness as a way of life oriented toward optimal health and well-being, in which in body, mind, and spirit are integrated, are connected in a purposeful way, in a purposeful manner. And the objective would be to live more fully, to live a more full life with those aspects, that body, mind, and spirit connected and integrated and robust, if you will. And there can be different components of wellness related to self-care that can combat burnout and compassion fatigue and secondary trauma. And one of them is the physical wellness and nutrition. And that's a hard one. I think that that's always been hard for me too. I'll get on a kick and then something will shift and change in my role as a, you know, professor, in my various professional roles as a professor, or when I was a clinician. I had to, part of my skill set and part of the job requirements was to adapt my schedule and to, you know, I was doing a lot of crisis interventions and things with trauma. So, you know, I was on call as a clinician 24/7 unless someone was you know, on call for me. So that's a lot of adapting. And so meal planning and really thinking about like when I could, like timing my day to where I could go and exercise at 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. sometimes just wasn't a practical solution for me as a therapist, because maybe I'd be in the hospital with a client because there was an emergency or there was a crisis that I had to tend to based on that role. So it's not an easy thing. And I don't think that that's everybody's, you know, situation, but it is an example of how it's easy for the physical wellness and the nutrition aspect to easily fall through the cracks. And I know for me personally, it does. So I have to really tend to it, but I know that, I'm not as mentally alert. I'm not the best version of myself when I'm not on some level tending to that physical wellness and nutrition. And I think that a lot of my colleagues could say the same thing. And it's something, but that is related to, you know, it's a self-care aspect that, and I would add to that sleep, just what that does to you physiologically when you have a lack of it and when you have, you know, a good sleep routine, a good sleep schedule, how that can help you thrive. Another aspect is managing stress effectively. And that can be very difficult to do. Stress comes and goes in different types of waves. Sometimes people just are able to manage high amounts of stress or different types of stress well. But you know, it just varies on the individual. And so just really looking at what are the aspects, that you're trying to, or what are ways in which you're able to relieve stress. And then another component that's really important is connecting with others and your environment, the environment with nature, connecting with others and connecting with nature. What I find too, and this is a really important piece, is that although therapists maybe really push and promote wellness for their clients or for, you know, or helping professionals really like talk about and help strategize with the people that they're helping, you know, and promote wellness for them, they find it difficult to engage in a wellness regime or, you know, looking at themselves and having a well lifestyle for them. So that's one thing to note, and to really recognize that we're worthy to focus on that. And it's actually ethically our responsibility to do that. And then also, you know, give that time, you know, to yourself, so that you can be the best version of you.
These suggestions are all really wonderful. And I do appreciate your pointing out that, you know, while many of us talk a great game, you know, about wellness, it's so important that we're mindful and self-aware and really take the time to recognize that it's important for us to use those techniques and to make sure we're using some wellness strategies to be able, like you said, to not only be our best versions of ourselves, but to be there for our families and our friends, in addition to our clients and students. So that's really important. Can you offer a strategy or two for the professional that might recognize, either through the podcast or any of the materials that you're offering, for review and reflection, if someone realizes that they might be experiencing compassion fatigue or burnout, what would you say are one or two things that maybe they could kind of, one or two steps they could take?
I think it's really important to acknowledge where you're at, and to not be judgmental, not to shame yourself, not to blame yourself, not to guilt. Acknowledge where you're at and congratulate yourself on having awareness and courage to have awareness, because acknowledging your needs. Because clearly, if you have these warning signs, if you're recognizing them, then there's some needs that aren't being met for you, and taking a look at that and implementing some strategies to get to a different place that's going to provide you with a more full and optimal kind of wellness lifestyle is going to be helpful for you. So you're on the right path. So that should be a congratulatory like thing. And I would offer too that piece that I just talked about is connectivity is really important to combating burnout and compassion fatigue. And so use collaborative strategies to promote your own emotional support. So for instance, I think Brené Brown, talks about, she does a lot of research on, shame and vulnerability, and shame can't live when it's shared. And I might be butchering that particular quote or phrase, but living in a culture of secrecy around shame and guilt or struggle when it comes to taking care of yourself or working with clients is actually going to further put you down the rabbit hole of all of these burnout, compassion fatigue, induction, things that aren't going to be helpful for you and for your clients. So, colleague support is very important. Colleague support that is well within our professional, ethics. We're not going out to every colleague that we know and blasting the business of our clients, but to really go to colleagues and saying, I'm having, trouble with this case. Supervisors are really helpful for that too. I'm really having trouble. So who are the people that you feel safe to talk about those troubles, who aren't going to come at it from a judgmental place, but from an empathetic place, and can offer you the support that you need to work through that?
One of the things that I have been really excited about, in addition to your wonderful webinars and blogs, is the podcast series that you do called Anchored. Yeah. And it's a great series with lots of really rich content and wonderful topics. Is there anything you want to say about your podcast?
We've definitely evolved and learned, we're learning. There's a big learning curve with podcasting, but we're so proud and humbled that we're getting some of the people, for the conversational interviews that we have, and who are so willing to share their expertise and their experiences. And it's just become one of my favorite parts of my job. And that particular podcast, we give free CEUs for, so definitely check that out. And it's available on iTunes. Again, it's the MFLN Anchored podcast series. And so feel free to check that out.
I've listened to many episodes. I am a fan, and I would highly recommend that. I hope our listeners will check that series out. I think that this information is going to be very helpful for our audience, and I really do appreciate your taking the time to do this. I know you have your own podcast series to work on, so thank you.
No problem, and I'll just look forward to hearing from you.
We have links to resources, tools, and additional information on burnout prevention and wellness on the Military Families Learning Network webpage for this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this topic, so feel free to comment in the section at the end of the Military Families Learning Network page for this episode, or email me directly at amc0157@auburn.edu. I'd love to hear from you. So until next time, be well, and as always, show up inspired and pass it on. Many thanks to Gloria for sharing her professional experience and to Dr. Casey Mixon of Valdosta State University and the Military Families Learning Network. Many thanks to my colleagues Andy Crocker, Rachel Bronner, Chris Klein, and Hannah Hyde at the Military Families Learning Network for their efforts in supporting this podcast. Special thanks to the military professionals featured in the podcast for their candid contributions during interviews conducted at military installations across the U.S. Special thanks to Rebecca Lombardi and Barbara Wilson. Music credit for the closing tracks to Chris Klein. And finally, thank you for joining the podcast.
This material is based on work supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy, U.S. Department of Defense Award Number 2015-487702-4368.